What?
Huff wiped his eyes as the battle-suited figure approached him.
Oh, thank God! Thank you! You can't imagine the hardship, the humiliation I've endured.
Cuff him!
But if you know who I am, why are you treating me like this?
Because I don't want you running off again.
Even distorted by the audio processor, the voice sounded vaguely familiar to Huff.
But I didn't run off! I was transported here by accident when the missile blew up the Totality Concept Complex!
There's no way to verify that, is there? Maybe you were part of the sabotage plan. Maybe you masterminded it. All I know for sure is that you're here and that my slave catcher snatched you up.
CEO Trask, is that you?
The visor cleared. Huff was struck speechless. He'd known Vreda Otis Trask since she was a little girl. Her late father, Regis Otis Trask, had been one of his early champions. The elder Trask had promoted his career as a young white coat, had followed his rise to fame and influence, and had been instrumental in his being appointed to the directorship of the Totality Concept, Five's most advanced and ambitious research program. Regis Otis Trask and the other Five CEOs were like figures from ancient history, like the Caesars or Borgias. These modern kings maintained their power through enormous, self-perpetuating bureaucracies, through favors granted or withdrawn, through webs of conspiracies. As with the Caesars and Borgias, their climb to the top was always bloody and violent. And once they were enthroned, they used their private armies to keep their positions. Their success was the result of cunning, not intelligence, of brutality, not reason. No reasoning individual would have wrung out the resources of the world like the last drops of juice from an orange. Remarkable genius though he was, Huff had come too late to do anything but delay the inevitable. There was no way to change the course of history already set by the conglomerates, who had balanced markets, consumption, and the taking of profits without regard to tomorrow. Over the course of their century-long reign, the conglomerates' viewpoint had shifted from "there's plenty to go around" to "let's squabble and backstab over the trickle that's left." In terms of outright viciousness, the Trask daughter had been even more prone to excess than her father. She was always able to grab Regis's attention, which she treasured, by going one step further than anyone else. Of course, there were never any negative consequences to her acts if they didn't produce, or if they turned out to be catastrophic. Her position as Regis Otis Trask's only child had made her invulnerable before his death. When she was made CEO in his place, she remained untouchable. Dreda was the CEO who had pushed through Five's disastrous beefy cheesy, tater cheesy program, and she'd personally coined the phrase, "let them eat rock." She'd repeatedly demonstrated that she had no scruples, foresight, or concern for aftermaths. Huff had privately ranked her as one of the least intelligent CEOs he'd ever dealt with. This combination also made her one of the most dangerous. And how had she gotten so big, so muscular, so manly?
You've certainly changed since I last saw you, Dreda.
So have you. Mighty impressive figure you're cutting, Dr. Huff.
I have been badly abused by these people. In order to survive, I've been forced to do things too awful to describe. Being lost in Deathlands has been the most terrible experience of my life.
Sounds tragic.
Why, yes, it is. But what about you? What happened to you?
Oh, this. Just a little genetic engineering. I'm bigger, stronger, and faster. Smarter, too.
Really?
I've gotten smart enough to know I don't need you anymore.
Surely my expertise
is out of date. My white coat stole your technology, miniaturized it, and made it portable. See those two big semi-trailers over there?
Yes.
Well, the trans-reality machinery is contained in them.
Huff looked at the trailers in disbelief. The original system he developed had taken up an entire skyscraper floor.
Miniaturization was the next logical step. Of course, that and reduced power consumption. Those improvements were already on the drawing board when I had my accident.
My white coats figured out how to do all that 6 months ago. They also figured out how to make the trans-reality jumps consecutive.
Consecutive? I'm sorry, I don't understand what you mean by that.
See what I'm saying? Obsolete. Anyway, your system had a fixed starting point in the totality concept tower, which made consecutive jumps impossible. If you wanted to go to a different reality from Deathlands, you had to return to our Earth, recalibrate the corridor to arrive at a new destination, then cross over. Every new destination required a step back to Earth. Now the entire generating system moves with us every time we jump, which means we can go from this reality to another, and another, and another, without ever returning to the starting point. The only limit to the number of consecutive jumps is access to power at the terminus.
Hoth stared at the glacier of nuke glass. Then it finally hit him. Power. That's why Dreda had come here. He could only blame physical hardship and a lack of calories for his failure to see it sooner. His mind wasn't working at its normal speed.
Reprocessing bacteria. Of course, you're using reprocessing bacteria.
Much better, old man. You're catching on. See, that's what those units over there are for.
She indicated a pair of six-wheeled trailers standing beside the thermoglass. At the ends of the huge boxes were hoppers, where the raw radioactive ore was dumped. They had chutes on their sides, so the rock dust, byproducts of bacteria's digestion, could be removed. Dreda didn't have to explain the technology to him. It was 25 years old, developed when his world had been forced to cannibalize the energy contained in its 100,000 warhead nuclear arsenal. Inside the black trailers, segregated colonies of bacteria performed a sequence of specific destabilizations on the inorganic material. The result, a concentrated liquidized fuel, was then pumped through thick hoses into waiting smaller tanker trucks.
There's an enormous supply of raw material out there. This world has hundreds of other nuked-out hotspots to exploit. The only limiting factor is having a labor force of sufficient size to extract it.
Hoth noted the lack of any shielding from the ore and the drippings of reprocessed nuclear fuel on the ground. The troopers were protected in battle suits, but the seeded Deathlanders were not.
What about rat hazard?
What about it?
Your workers are exposed.
That's nothing compared to what they're going to soak up in the next few days. But you're going to see that firsthand.
I know the technology. You know I know it. I can help you maximize your efforts.
How? You're nothing but a puffed-up bureaucrat.
That's not what your father thought.
Ha! You don't know what my father thought.
How dare you?
Regis Otis Trask always said you, Dr. Hutt, were easy to manipulate. Because you were so vain. That's why he kept you on a leash all those years.
He did not.
Calm now. Think about it. Anyway, your techno skills are useless to me here. What I need is slaves.
Do you know how many degrees I have?
I'm sure they'll help you dig more ore. Now it's time to start walking. I don't need to warn you about those manacles. Step off the road and you won't be stepping anywhere ever again.
With that, she roughly pushed him toward the other captives, who rose from the ground en masse at a signal from their guards. The Deathlands mob surrounded him.
So you're the bastard to thank for bringing these muty assholes here? No! Get him! Please! No! Stop!
Okay, enough of that.
Start moving, dogs! You've got 8 miles to cover before dark. Any stragglers will lose a hand. As you can imagine, it's very hard to make your ore quota with only one hand. No quota, no water. Fall down en route, and the ore wags will drive over you. There's only one way to stay alive, and that's to keep walking.
An instant before the cave's ceiling dropped, JB twisted on his knees and lunged, throwing a shoulder into Ryan's midsection, driving them both through the archway and into the alcove beyond. Ryan hit the sand on his back as the roof collapsed. The resulting rush of wind extinguished the torch, plunging the companions into a darkness filled with choking clouds of grit. The yelling stopped at once. As their eyes adjusted to the reduced light, the superheated rear wall glowed hellishly through the swirls of settling dust.
Somebody find that torch.
Fumbling around on the sandy floor, Jack located it and passed it over to JB, who once again sparked it ablaze. Over their heads, the ceiling of the second chamber had held. The front gallery, on the other hand, had caved in completely. Where the archway had once stood was a solid floor-to-ceiling wall.